From the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Farming Country. I'm your host, Kimberly Izar. It's Saturday, November 8th. On today's show, we're making sure our farmers are set up for success. If you're a farmer yourself, you know there are so many moving parts to run a viable farm business. And that includes marketing your products to reach people. We chat with food and agriculture consultant Eric Hassert about how to build a strong marketing plan to market your farm and make sure your business is built for the long haul. Plus, this year's elections wrapped up this past Tuesday, and on the ballot for New Yorkers was a proposition to protect thousands of acres up in the Adirondacks. We'll get an update on that. Plus, it's breeding season for deer right now. What do you do when you see them? All of that in Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report, but first, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. The back and forth over SNAP benefits is leaving millions of Americans who rely on government food assistance in limbo. In Philadelphia, SNAP recipient Fran Cooper says she wants Washington to get its act together.
This is not good for people. I never thought at 73 I'd be living like this. It's not good. Puts a lot of stress on you.
Full payment of food and food aid benefits is on hold amid the government shutdown. Last night, the U.S. Supreme Court granted the Trump administration's request for a temporary stay of a court order to fully fund SNAP, while an appeal of a lower court order plays out. In Washington, senators are working this weekend for the first time since the government shutdown more than a month ago. A deal remains elusive. Travelers facing a second day of delays and cancellations at the nation's airports due to flight cuts ordered by the Federal Aviation Administration. Officials say the order is intended to keep air travel safe amid the government shutdown. Both UPS and FedEx say they have grounded their fleets of the type of aircraft involved in this week's deadly crash in Louisville. NPR's Matt Bloom reports on the decision that came at the recommendation of the plane's manufacturer.
The plane involved was a McDonnell Douglas MD-11, a type of long-haul airliner manufactured in the 90s and mostly used by cargo companies. They make up about 9% of UPS's fleet and 4% of FedEx's. UPS said in a statement that it made the decision to ground its MD-11 planes out of an abundance of caution and at the direction of the company that made them. Federal investigators are still determining the exact cause of the Louisville crash. Videos of the plane show its left engine and wing ablaze as it attempted to take off down the runway. The engine fell from the wing during takeoff. Matt Bloom, NPR News.
The top Trump administration official overseeing federal statistical agencies is raising concerns about how well the government protects the data it collects from the public. NPR's Hansi Lo Wang reports on the multiple lawsuits the administration is facing, claiming it has violated data privacy protections.
Mark Calabria started in July as the chief statistician at the White House's Office of Management and Budget. Speaking at the think tank Center for Strategic and International Studies, Calabria said the federal government is falling short on keeping the data it collects from the public secure.
I'm not convinced that we, the government, live up to those same standards on a daily basis that we expect of the private sector. And so part of my agenda is how do we get ourselves there where we can say that the federal government is first in class in protecting your data.
OMB's press office did not respond to questions about what exactly is sparking Calabria's concern. Multiple lawsuits claim the Trump administration violated the Privacy Act when it gave its DOGE team members access to records at the IRS and other agencies. Hansi Lo Wang, NPR News.
And you're listening to NPR News.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Starting in January, New Yorkers enrolled in a range of low-cost health insurance plans will lose in-network care at Optum Health. Optum Health said it would no longer cover Fidelis WellCare and Cigna HealthSpring plans. Here's Philip Pantuso of the Times Union.
Optum Healthcare, which is probably the largest healthcare provider in the Hudson Valley, it's a subsidiary of United Health Group, and it owns Crystal Run, subsidiaries all the way down. It announced last week that it would go out of network for all Fidelis WellCare plans and Cigna HealthSpring plans, which are essentially the Medicaid plans for those health insurance companies. So we don't exactly know, because they wouldn't tell us how many people that this would affect. But, you know, there are a lot of New Yorkers on Medicare and Medicaid, And a not insignificant portion of them are on these specific plans. And they will no longer be able to use those health insurance plans at what is the largest healthcare provider in the region. So, not good news if you're on one of those plans and you're currently a patient at Optum.
Orange County-based Crystal Run Healthcare has about 400 providers at clinics, including those in Middletown, Rock Hill, Goshen, and Warwick. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
Support for NPR comes from the Skoll Foundation, dedicated to powering social innovators to transform the world. Learn more at skoll.org. And Jarl and Pamela Mohn, focusing on civil liberties, foster youth, public radio, and the arts.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Farming Country. I'm Kimberly Izar. Well, earlier this week, if you've been listening to Radio Catskill or just paying attention to the news generally, it was Election Day on Tuesday. And if you headed to the polls in New York, you probably saw Proposition 1 about preserving and protecting land just a few hours from us here in the Catskills in the Adirondacks. On Tuesday, voters across New York narrowly approved Proposition 1. The ballot measure amends the state constitution to retroactively allow ski trails and other development on the Adirondack Forest Preserve. It also protects thousands of acres in the park. And according to unofficial election results, Prop 1 was approved by about 46% of voters, while more than 12% left their ballots blank. Emily Russell reports for the New York Public News Network and brings us this report.
With the approval of Proposition 1, the New York State Constitution will be amended to allow development at Mount Van Hovenberg Olympic Sports Complex in Lake Placid. The state-run site is managed by the Olympic Regional Development Authority. Years ago, ORDA violated the state's constitution when it cut down trees on part of the property that's on State Forest Preserve. A majority of voters in every North Country county approved Prop 1. The ballot measure wasn't as well received downstate, where it was rejected by a majority of voters in most counties in the New York City area. Voters in Manhattan narrowly approved the measure by a 1% margin. Now that Prop 1 has been approved, ORDA's management and any future development at Mount Van Hovenberg will be legal. Voters have approved similar amendments to allow state management at Whiteface and Gore Mountains. The passage of Prop 1 also approves a new land deal for the Adirondacks. The DEC is now required to add 2,500 acres of land to the Forest Preserve as a way to make amends for ORDA's past violations. The DEC says it's unclear where that new Forest Preserve land will be or how the state will pay for it. In the Adirondacks, I'm Emily Russell for the New York Public News Network.
Thanks so much to Emily for that update. And I have one more update from the New York Public News Network about an issue that I'm very curious about, which is deer spotting. Oh my goodness, I don't know about y'all, but I cannot tell you how much more deer I feel like I've noticed lately, especially in the last few weeks, especially. And if you've noticed more deer darting across roads or wandering maybe through your yard lately, you're not like imagining things. Fall is really when these animals are most active and visible. WSHU's Sabrina Garone has more.
Fall is the breeding season for deer. In fact, early November is peak rut when deer are most, well, distracted. Combine that with our region's densely populated suburbs, and it's a recipe for increased deer car collisions. Suffolk County ranks third highest in New York State for accidents involving deer, according to AAA. Tony DiNicola is founder of White Buffalo, a nonprofit wildlife management group.
And that keeps them from being as cautious and I would say aware of their surroundings, because the males are just aggressively chasing females, and both the female and the male are so preoccupied that road crossings tend to increase just due to that sheer amount of activity.
Be extra alert during dawn and dusk, and if you see one deer cross the road, expect more. They usually travel in groups. I'm Sabrina Garone for the New York Public News Network.
Thanks to Sabrina for that update. And yeah, keep an eye out for deer, especially while you're driving. Also keep an eye out for moose. I got an email from New York State's DEC with just some tips on making sure you're keeping an eye out for deer and moose. Animals are especially active at dawn and dusk, so make sure to go slow and don't forget to use your emergency lights or headlights when needed. Now, moving right along, we're going to talk about marketing. If you are a farmer or own a small business yourself, I'm sure know that learning how to market your farm is essential to making sure that your business is built for many, many years to come. But there's so many different pieces. Before I became a journalist, I actually studied marketing in college, and there are just so many different moving parts. I mean, what kind of products should you sell? What social media channels? Who's your audience? Joining me on the phone now is Eric Hassert. He's a food and farm consultant whose experience comes from years of working in agriculture and food ecosystems, from his early days as a chef and butcher to working at Grow NYC as a strategic marketing specialist and now helping farmers grow their businesses. Eric, welcome to Farming Country.
Thank you so much, Kim. It's really nice to be on. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
Of course. I mean, I'm really excited for this conversation. I mean, Eric, I would just love to hear a little bit first about how you got involved with working in farming and food ecosystems.
Sure. So my background was I started as a cook back in the day on the Jersey Shore. That was my first job. And really got into food because of that and because of my mom teaching me how to cook when I was a youngin. And then I went to school up in upstate New York, and it was just like cow pasture after cow pasture, then my school, then more cow pastures. And so started to get the bug then, but didn't fully really get it until I decided I wanted to go back into cooking after having done a brief stint in video production after college. But I didn't really think I had the chops to stick it out as a cook for the rest of my life, given the hours and stress levels and such. And so chose to try to do butchering, whole animal butchering. And I worked at this great shop, Dixon's Farm Stand Meats, and trained there, which sourced all their products from New York State. And that's how I started to really get connected to the agricultural component of food and get a lot closer to that. And I was lucky enough to, after having my own butcher shop, to then meeting a bunch of farms as a result of that, and then eventually working for a livestock farm that was right around the corner from where I went to college. So it's really where my true dive deep into agriculture began. And I have just loved every moment of it since.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Yeah. When you were talking about how when you were as a kid, just, you know, learning how to cook with your family, that made me think of like my own early days of cooking with my mom, and just then moving up here and then hosting Farm and Country. It's like hard not to catch the farm bug.
Oh, yeah. There's just such great product and such great people that grow it that, you know, when you work with food that's freshly grown and just pulled out of the soil, it you don't even have to be a good cook. You can be a total newbie and still make amazing meals for your family and your friends.
I love that. Well, Eric, you are in conversations with farmers all the time. I'd love to just hear about the kinds of farmers that you work with and what you hear from them about the types of support they need.
The types of farms that I work with is pretty varied, to be honest. I have one of my clients right now is a really large organic vegetable farm in Madison County called Norwich Meadows Farm. And they do this amazing amount of production with tons of high tunnels extending their season, and are able to feed not only, some of the best chefs and restaurants in New York City, but also They have a huge food access component to their farm. And the one thing that they brought me on to do is to try to help expand their network and their footprint by adding in e-commerce and nationwide shipping. The other types of farms that I work with, like I said, are diversified vegetables, livestock farms. The one really exciting nonprofit that I work for out of Cold Spring, New York, is called Glenwood. And my colleague, June Russell, she brought me on. I used to work with her at Grow NYC, and she has a regional grains program there that the intention is to expand basically Northeast production of regional grains and have the nonprofit sort of act as like a regional grains connector between millers, bakers, distillers, and the farmers up in the Finger Lakes and down in Hudson Valley that grow those grains for them. And that's been some really interesting work in terms of just the depth of knowledge that those growers and those producers have and just how expansive that specific commodity is. What farmers need, I think there's so many things that farmers need, from access to land, access to capital, beginner farmer training, you know, the ability to have succession plans set up so that way the, you know, land that they have built and you know, provided great regenerative soil for can actually continue to be farmed so that it doesn't turn into real estate development. And then, you know, my more of my specialty is working with them on specifically business technical assistance and marketing assistance.
I mean, Eric, even just hearing you describe the kinds of farmers that you're currently working with, from e-commerce to making sure that they have the right grain vendors, and then talking about broader challenges of access to capital, access to land. I mean, there's just so many, there's so many moving parts to running a successful farm business. And I'm curious, just like when farm owners are just starting out, you specialize in, you know, the marketing aspect of the business. What types of questions do you recommend they ask of their business, especially as they're starting out?
I mean, honestly, one of the first things that I have a farmer do when I'm working with them, if they're just beginning, and even if they're not just beginning, if they're just considering like new ways to consider the resources that they have at their hand already. So like, who is your network right now in terms of friends and family? What is your skill set that you bring to the table already? What is your interest level? Like, are you a wholesale farmer or are you a retail farmer? Do you like, my bass just fell over. Are you someone who likes to talk to the public all day and wants to direct market to them? Or are you someone who would really just like to, you know, nose to the ground, stay on the farm all day, and have, you know, a distributor come and pick up your products? Like, all those different avenues in which you can market your product really are determined by, you know, who you are as a person. And I think that's what's so interesting when you walk onto a farm, is that it is this like external version of a person's internal personality and expression of that personality based on how they choose to run their farm and how they choose to market their products and such. So I really always try and make sure that they're just leaning into what it is that makes them tick. My favorite, they're no longer my clients. We finished up our project years ago, but she has taken the beginning farmer training and the beginning stages of building out her website and just her concept. She's based in the Chester Ag Center, or Agricultural Center in Orange County, which is an amazing center. If you've never checked that out, it has multiple farms from all different backgrounds who are all sharing the same piece of land that was purchased by a nonprofit, and they all share infrastructure and equipment and skill sets and such. But Christina Chan from Choi Division, who is also a part of, she started Choi Commons. And they grow diversified Asian vegetables specifically for Asian communities in New York City. And she is someone who from day one, I mean, even her name, Choi Division, a play on Joy Division, is like so her personality that I didn't, you know, it was probably one of the easiest people, clients to work with, because she just knew who she was, what she wanted to do. That type of like internal reflection and understanding makes my job a lot easier when I walk in and the person just has all the answers and is, you know, very specific on how they want to be, who they are, and where they want to go with their life in farming.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. I want to ask you just a little bit of a pivot, but just how farm businesses are doing right now in this current landscape with the government shutdown and its 6 week and SNAP benefits have been delayed for the month of November. And I know that farmers and farm markets accept SNAP. I'm curious just if you're hearing anything from farmers right now about how that's impacted their businesses at all.
Yeah, unfortunately, as you would imagine, it very much has impacted it. I mean, we're already seeing, thousands of farms shut down as a result of the thin margins that they have to work on and the fact that a lot of government subsidies go to the largely commodified and technically non-food producing farms out in the Midwest and such. And those types of specialty crops, as they're called, which I find hilarious, given that specialty crops encompass basically all edible vegetables, are the ones that usually there's specialized grant programs and such. And while we do still have a lot of grants that are out there currently from the USDA that are passed through to the state, a lot of that funding is really in jeopardy and has actually created a situation wherein some farms really haven't been able to lean in on the government and the citizens of America to help them grow the amazing products that they do. And so they're sort of left to their own whims where they have to really bootstrap it and figure out how they can continue to feed people without the support of the general public. And given the climate right now, it's really unfortunate because there's such a disparity in terms of income levels and access to SNAP is so important. And there's a lot of farms that really that's their main purpose, is that they want to feed, not only feed people, but feed people who can't necessarily afford good food. And so SNAP is a huge, huge benefit in the ability to get fresh, healthy produce to all different types of communities. And with that being in jeopardy, it really does make it hard for a farmer to get up in the morning and to be able to not only feed themselves, but also feed their community.
Well, Eric, I am curious if you have, as a farm and food consultant, if you have any advice for maybe some of these farmers who may need to pivot right now, I think also as we move into possibly the more quieter, colder months for farmers.
Oof, that's a hard one. it really does depend on the individual farm and sort of what resources they have on hand themselves.
Right.
Obviously, like one thing that I always say to a farm is to, you know, expansion just for the sake of expansion, or diversification, or, complication of your farm and your products you grow isn't necessarily a good thing. Like we all, you know, we're so used to, you know, the Jeff Bezos, Amazon, like we can get anything and everything that we want as a consumer kind of world. But as a farmer, if you really just focus in on what you do well and what you can do well based on the equipment that you have, the land that you have, your skill sets that you have, you can really dial in on, there's a thing called Prieto's formula or something like that, which is essentially like, if you spend, quite often what you'll do is you'll spend 80% of your energy on 20% of the things that you're actually producing, wherein you should be spending that energy on the products that are actually creating the most amount of like profit margin. So like one thing that I saw a farm do and pivot to, which I thought was really great, was he was a livestock farmer who was, you know, doing a typical farmer's market, selling the animal piece by piece, and really got a lot out of that. But he was based up in Vermont. But when he realized that he could actually make a heck of a lot more profit margin if he turned everything but the pork chops into sausage, and started selling that sausage both in retail environments and wholesale environments, that he could add additional income to his overall bottom line, sausage by sausage. And all of a sudden, his livestock farm, which had been sailing, was able to actually make it through some tough times just because everybody loved his breakfast sausage at the farmer's market and at the local retail stores.
I think that's a great example that you lifted up, and then also just great advice generally. Lock in on what's working and also at the same time keep an open mind. Eric, you're in conversations with farmers all the time. And for our listeners, you're going to be hearing more from him here on Farming Country as a contributor from time to time about what opportunities are available to farmers in our area. I've been chatting with Eric Hassert, food and farm consultant, and you'll be hearing more from Eric in the later months. Eric, thank you so much for chatting, and I'm very excited to have you back on.
Of course. Thank you so much, Kim. I'm very humbled to be able to be on and really excited to be able to do some work with you on this project. Good luck to everybody with the upcoming winter. I hope people stay safe, drive safe, and continue to eat good local food.
Up next, you know what time it is. This Saturday's Star Talk Report with Keith Hubbard.
For Farm and Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. These cold winter nights are perfect for stargazing with binoculars. The cold air stills the atmosphere, which allows for a clearer, crisper view through the binoculars. Also, there are two very good objects to view that will be up all night this winter. The first of these objects is in Orion, the constellation that dominates the winter sky. The Great Nebula in Orion is part of Orion's sword that hangs down from his belt. The nebula is visible to the unaided eye as the second point of light in the sword. Through binoculars, the blue haze of the nebula is apparent. The nebula is a reflection nebula with the blue color a result of light reflecting off the gases in it. The second object is in the same region of the sky as Orion, only a little higher. The Pleiades star cluster is the most prominent open cluster in the sky. An open cluster, such as the Pleiades, is a group of up to a few thousand stars that were formed from the same giant gas cloud and are loosely gravitationally attracted to one another. It can be found just to the right of the V of Taurus. Without binoculars, the Pleiades appear misty, and six of the brightest 500 stars in the cluster are visible. Through binoculars, many more stars can be seen, and the misty blue light is more pronounced. These two misty blue jewels are excellent objects to spot in binoculars, both because of their beauty and of the ease of finding them. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future Star Talk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard, reminding you to keep looking up.
Thanks so much to Keith for this week's report. Before we sign off, just a few local events from our community calendar. The Western Sullivan Public Library presents the DIY Club focused on magical potions on Friday, November 14th at 4:30 p.m., This will be at the Delaware Free Branch in Calicoon. And on Friday, we'll be brewing up some special potions and wellness satchels for the upcoming winter season with guest educator Dale Butchister. And then the following day, on Saturday, November 15th, the Delaware Highlands Conservancy will hold a program about white-tailed deer at the Van Scott Nature Reserve in Beach Lake, Pennsylvania. If you guys haven't been to this Van Scott Nature Reserve, it's absolutely gorgeous. We were just talking about deer on the show, and now you have an opportunity to learn more. So this program, called The Wonderful White Tails, explores the increased activity of white-tailed deer during the approaching breeding season and their behavior throughout different times of the year. You can find more information on all these events and more events happening in your community at wjffradio.org. And that's all I have for you this week. This show was produced by the Radio Catskill editorial team and post-production by Ronald Kelson. Up next, it's Catskill Character. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, NPR. I'll catch you next week.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Morgan Outdoors, celebrating 20 years as a local source for hiking, snowshoeing, and discovering the great outdoors. on Main Street in Hurleyville, near the rail trail. Morgan-Outdoors.com.
Next time on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we'll hear some jazz heat, bongo beat, plus the Voodoo Five plays the Dead Kennedys.